Blog Talk Radio.
Show with Jackie Wayans. Inspiration through word and song for you.
Hello, my dear listeners. Welcome to the show. Glad to have you back another week, refreshed and ready to go. And yes, you may be listening tonight and thinking, I'm not so refreshed, Jackie. I'm not so raring to go. But after tonight's episode, you will. We have a wonderful guest tonight, Tawana Brooks, and she's an accomplished playwright. She has many plays that have been turned into movies. You can actually view them on Netflix. Who Did I Marry? God's Precious Jewels with Robin Givens. When a Woman Fed Up. You know, she has been blessed to have these stories to share and tell with you in many ways. And she has a wonderful passion for those who are living with HIV and AIDS. We'll hear a little bit more about that as we go through the show. But she's here today to discuss elements from her latest book, Heaviness of My Heart, as she chronicles events of her life story, touching very sensitive issues, everything from suicide, teen pregnancies, sexual assault, family drama, illness. It's all in there. So keep your ears perked up, because you're going to hear someone who's been plunged into the depths, and she is here to talk about it and to tell of what God has done and is doing. Welcome, Tawana, to the show.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Well, I'm excited. I really am. When I have guests appeal to the show and reach out to me, I really try to get a grasp of their story and what they have to share. And by far, hands down, I said, I've got to have you on the show. You are the embodiment of what Don't Give Up stands for, those who are reaching for goals, for dreams in their lives, while pushing away the challenges that life often throws at us. And some of us get like dodgeball. It's like the balls just keep coming, and we're wondering, Lord, when are we going to get a break? And for you, it started very early in life. And so why don't you take us back to your family dynamic growing up? You know, was there drama in your life from early on? What was it like growing up for you?
Yes, it was. Child, it was perfect because I was a child. But when I became 12, my mom left my dad, and she moved a man in with us. He was a stranger, so we went back to our dad and told him we wanted to come back home, and he wanted us to come back home. He was excited. But she wouldn't let us go. And so he came, and she wouldn't let him in the house. And he went back home, and he committed suicide. Like, hours later, he committed suicide.
Oh, no.
And that devastated me. Yeah, because I'm the only girl, and I'm the oldest.
Mm.
So it was a lot on my shoulders because, you know, I had my younger brothers, and I had to do a lot. Like, my mother was always gone, so I had to like, she was working all the time. We just were gone a lot, like out in clubs and stuff. So I had to look out for my brothers to make sure they ate and all that. They were pretty bad. Babysitters were quiet because they were like a handful. I got three younger brothers. And at 15, it was just like a lot of stuff. The way my father and I, we had a real good relationship. I could talk to him about anything. But my mother and I don't have a relationship like that, and I can't talk to her about anything because my issues are not her issues. So it's like me. She's always about herself. So it's hard for us to even have a relationship. When I try to, you know, I want to have a mother, but when I try to have a relationship, she pushes me away. At 14, she had my aunt take me to give me on birth control pills, and I was a virgin, so it hurt. And it not only hurt me physically, but it hurt my feelings. It hurt me mentally. And I was already defiant because my daddy was gone. And she made me get on pills. Had my aunt take me, so I was mad. I was like, she should have took me. That's what a mother should do. You don't have somebody else take me. And I don't even know what I'm going for. I didn't know until I got there, but Dr. Wild was there because my aunt didn't tell me until I got there. So could you imagine, like, they telling me take off clothes. I ain't never been, you know, have to take off clothes in front of anybody. So I was like, what am I doing this for? I was so confused. So I was I became very defiant, and because I was still hurting from the loss of my dad, I didn't like the man who lived in the house home with us.
Yeah, I don't want to get, we're going to get there. But I wanted to go back right before, as you're explaining the time where your mom is taking you to the doctor and the aunt and the birth control and the confusion. What were some of the early lessons you were learning at this time about relationships? I'm not saying they were right lessons or correct or anything, but what were you starting to learn about relationships? What was the message being sent to you about relationships at that time?
I was confused. I was really confused. I knew about love because my dad showed love. So I knew people love you. And when he died, I was back in love. So, you know, he and my mother was together for years up until I was 12. So that's what we knew. It was my three brothers, myself, my mom, and my dad. She used to work second shift. He would cook. We had dinner at the table and everything. A lot of things changed after he died. And I changed. I really changed. I didn't really have a childhood.
I would imagine not, yeah, because here you are now the oldest, and you're taking care of your siblings, you know, and being put in a position to many adult things. So now... When a young person is facing all of this type of adjustment, they usually struggle in various ways, act out in various. And given the fact that they put you on the pill, did that lead to you becoming promiscuous in any way as you start to go out? Did you figure like, well, what the heck? If they put me on the pill, they expect this of me. I mean, what was your
exactly? Yeah. That's it. That's it. My mindset was I wasn't thinking about having sex. So I had a boyfriend, but I was 14. I had sense enough not to have sex. I was 14 years old. I was, you know, on a roll. I loved school. I wanted to live my teenage life, although I was still hurting from the loss of my dad, but I wanted to live a teenage life, and I wasn't able to do that. And, like, I couldn't get on the drill team. That I couldn't do it. I joined, and she's like, I don't know how you're going to get there. And, you know, it was just different stuff, and it was depressing me, and I just didn't want to be in the house anymore, and I couldn't figure out how to get out because I had 4 years before. And to me, you know, a child, 4 years is forever. 4 years really is not really long, but as a 12-year-old, I'm like, oh, I've got too long to be here because I was very unhappy. And she would sit and police me taking those pills. And exactly what you said, I would spit those pills out when she left out of the room because I was like, I was mad. I was very angry. I was like, I didn't want to get on those pills. I didn't want that pap smear. I didn't want that. It was forced on me. And I wouldn't have had sex. I wouldn't have because I didn't want to. I was always wanted to wait until I was married. You know, I always had that mindset. It wasn't put in me. A lot of stuff that's in me came from God because it wasn't taught to me, like, get married, then have sex, or remain celibate. I had to get God. I did. And, you know, we didn't really go to church when we did when my father was alive, but we didn't after he died.
Okay. So you had a God awareness because of your dad. But after that, there was nothing.
Nothing.
Well, when we come back, we're going to hear more of Tawana's story. We're going to get deeper into the many trials and challenges that her life presented. But hold on, because it does not end there, and we're going to see what God does.
But it was rain from the storm. Thoughts over my head, making me stress all day long. They won't let me rest, cast on my chest. I ain't that strong. I need a lifeline right now. 911 won't do. My back gets the wall now. Done all that I could do. I prayed every prayer, went to every service like I know how. Just a ship without a sail. I'm lost without your help. It's all about what you want. Your family used to be first, things getting worse in my home. My brother is hurt, we need a word, it's too far gone. I need a lifeline right now, 911 won't do. My back against the wall now, done all that I could do. I prayed every prayer, went to every service like I know how. Just a ship without a sail, I'm lost without you.
Show with Jackie Wayans. Inspiration through word and song for you.
And we are back with Twana Lawler. She is author, playwright. She is really passionate about speaking into the lives of women, especially those suffering with HIV and AIDS. And we just started to hear a glimpse of her story. I mean, just at the age of 12, years old to 14 years old, the amount of trauma that she was that was inflicted upon her, and unfortunately, it didn't just end there. And as you said, you know, here you are and you realize at 14 you still have 4 more years before you can get out of the situation. You are under the subjection of this parental environment that you're in. And so they gave you the pills. You're spitting them out because you're so angry. But at the same time, you end up, you know, having a sexual encounter and being 15 and getting pregnant. And so talk to us about the difficulty of that dynamic, because it's hard to be a teen mother, but it's also hard when you are in a family that is dysfunctional. So what did your days look like?
Well, she did let me leave. I got what I wanted. She did leave. I moved in with my then boyfriend's mom and his sister, and he would come and stay sometimes. But I stayed there, went to school from there, and I was a lot happier at that point and wasn't, you know, as sad as I was, because I wasn't around the mom's boyfriend and I wasn't around all the negative stuff. But then those people end up being negative too. But at that time, because this was the first grandchild on both sides, so they were excited. The paternal family, they were excited about my oldest daughter. So, you know, I was happy then at that time. But later on, I started getting sad again for other reasons. But we'll talk about it. But I ended up marrying her dad at 16. And that was the worst mistake. And I don't know why those papers were saying, because I never went to my mom and said, I want to get married. I wanted to finish school. I wanted to have an education. And, you know, I ended up getting married. And at 16, we got married at 16. And shortly after, I got pregnant again. But the day we got married, he hit me. He hit me in my eye. But the first time he hit me, said I was looking at his brother. And that wasn't true. But the norm, I'm sorry, I'll never do it again. And I ended up getting pregnant with my second daughter. And he started beating me really bad, really bad.
I'm sorry, I just want to slow it down and really understand. So all the time that you guys were dating, he's your boyfriend, he'd never hit you or beat you during that time?
No, he never, ever. He treated me very kind, but once we got married, that's when he started beating me.
Now, whose idea was it for the marriage? Because it wasn't yours, was it his?
No, it was his mother, and she came and talked to my mother behind our back. We had no idea.
I see. All right. So here he is. And he's 16, and he's forced into something that he didn't necessarily want.
Right. I was 16. He was like 19 or something. He was older than me.
I think he was
18.
All right. Yeah. And there's no excuse at all for any type of abuse at all. I was just trying to figure out, it was never a part of your relationship, because usually you see a red flag somewhere beforehand, but for it to just happen like that once you get married, that tells me that the pressures of the situation was like a fire that was igniting a really bad situation to occur.
Mm-hmm.
And so now you have your second child, more pressure, more stress, more responsibility, and now the abuse becomes regular.
Yeah.
Where do you go? Where do you go from here? What did you do?
Right. I had nobody to turn to, so I kept it to myself. I would have black eyes. I was staying in the house. And he did a lot of crazy things, like he would take the phones and wrap the cord around it and take them to work with him. And, you know, that's some outlandish stuff right there. And because he was real jealous and controlling, so I couldn't go anywhere. Like, sometimes he would take me over his grandmother's house as if she was babysitting me and my two daughters. But he pushed me down a flight of stairs, and my two daughters were sitting on the couch. And he ran down, I was trying to get up, and he ran down the stairs, and he started kicking me with steel-toed boots on. And my babies were screaming and crying. And that's the day I said to myself, I'm out of here. I don't know if I go out with my no clothes and nothing once he go to work. And that's what I did. Once he went to work, I called my mom. And I said, get a truck because I'm going.
So your mom comes to pick you up. And she gets you out of this situation. All right. And you're able to divorce him?
Not at that point. I didn't. I just left him. I left him.
Okay.
And I went and stayed with this guy's mother. She has went to stay somewhere else, and she said I could stay in her apartment until I could find something. So he didn't know where that apartment was. So he didn't know where I was. They said he was looking for me with a gun and everything, but he didn't know where I was. And then I end up and then moving. I had ended up getting pregnant by that guy whose mother let me come and stay at her house. And he was nice to me at first, and he used to cook for me and everything. Then he started beating me.
Right, right. Because the pattern is not so much in them. The pattern is inside of you, but you know, you haven't been able to figure that out yet because you're just trying to survive.
Right. He was doing crack. I walked in the room. That's when he started fighting me. He didn't fight me at first, but I walked in the room feeling needed in his arm. And see, I'm young and naive. I wasn't raised around that. So I'm like, what the heck you doing? I didn't know what he was doing. And, you know, eventually I found out it was drugs, but I didn't know people did that because I wasn't even raised in the hood and stuff. I wasn't raised like that. So I didn't know a lot of stuff I didn't know. I had to learn, like, about the streets. I didn't know about that stuff. So he started fighting me. And I had a daughter by him. But when I had her, I asked my ex-husband's sister, my ex-sister-in-law, and his mother to keep my two oldest daughters while I, you know, heal from having my third baby. They said, okay. I said, bring them back in about 2 days. 2 days came, and no kids. So I went and called, and I said, where's the kids? You going to bring them home? She cussed me out and said, you never getting your kids back. And being a teen mom, I love my daughters. My daughters are my life because they saved my life for real. And I was so mad, but I was in the world then, so she was all kind of names, and she was going to get her behind kicked. But I couldn't even get my kids back. I couldn't get them back because I was still married to him. But see, I was getting favored when I was in the world. God was giving me favor. God had my back because I've been through a lot. The policeman came. I called the policeman to tell him they won't give me my kid. He said he pulled a cord out of his shirt, and he said, here, call this number. He said, because you're going to have to divorce him. Because they were, like, shocked. They were like, why would they take this girl's kid? They wouldn't let me talk to them, wouldn't let me see them or anything. And it was devastating. And I sit and cried and rocked and couldn't sleep because I really missed my baby. And I fought for him. I fought hard, and I got them back. I got them back, and, you know, they had to go to therapy and stuff because no telling what was going on in their house. And I'm sorry.
So you were able to get them back, and you also have your most recent daughter. Now, this situation with this gentleman, so how did you get away from this gentleman now with the third baby?
The second one. After a lot of fighting, and, like, it's hard to, he did things to me like he was strung out on drugs, so he would steal from me. Like, he stole my car. He stole my floor model color TV to get drugs, and I got fed up. I got fed up, and my brother said, if he hits you again, get this skillet, pop up inside his head. And then I hit him with the skillet, and it terrified him. And I told him, get out and don't come back, and he left and didn't come back. So I was glad. I was glad because I was just so really confused. Like, why am I going through this? Because that don't feel good when you're getting smacked and kicked downstairs. That's not a good feeling.
Of course not. No, not at all. And so here you are. How old are you about this time?
19. I was 19 with three kids.
And you have three kids. What do you do next? What do you look at? Sure. What are you thinking?
Look, as soon as I left my ex-husband, he had made me drop out of high school. I was in 12th grade. He made me drop out because he was jealous. He was real jealous and controlling. Well, as soon as I left him, the next day I got my GED. Got it the first day. Then I started working. So I was working. I had three kids. I was working. And then I ended up going to Harris School, cosmetology school, but I did not like it. I like getting my hair done for free, but I didn't like doing people's hair. I just didn't like it. It wasn't me. And I knew God had something else in me. I didn't know it was the writing, but I knew because I used to write, and I used to DJ, and I used to write, like, rap songs and stuff. And so I knew I had that writing in me, but, you know, I just never was kids, but I always had good jobs, you know, and I went to work, I went to college, I ended up graduating, so I had to set a good example for my daughter. I didn't want them growing up, you know, I want them to be able to come to me and talk to me.
Right.
I wasn't able to go to my mom and talk to her.
It's amazing to me that you went on to accomplish all those great things with having such a limited start in life, and it really just goes to show that will that God places in us. But when did you start to seek out God? When did you decide that you wanted to have a relationship with him and get back to what your father had introduced to you as a little girl?
I was going to church. You know, I was going to church, and little regular people go to church, and hallelujah, hallelujah. But then when I left church, I go have a drink. Because I started drinking beer after the rape. At 21, that's when I was raped, and I never had smoked a cigarette, touched a beer, no cat, did nothing. No marijuana, I did nothing. I was just plain. And that rape, I started drinking, so like in the 1998, 1997, I was start club hopping and going out and stuff. And I eventually started getting tired of it. And I didn't understand why. And I was going to church, and I wasn't really getting anything out of church but the music. I wasn't really listening to the word because in my mind, I'm ready to go home and fry some chicken. You know, I just wasn't really into it. But one day I was in my bed, I had surgery, and I was laying in the bed and I was crying out to God because, you know, from surgery, it's hurting. And he spoke to me. I heard his voice, and he said, you're going to be okay, you're going to be all right. And that day, instantly, cigarettes, taste for it, desire, gone, sex, gone, everything left me, everything went, and I got baptized because I was new. I was new, and I thank God every day because born again experience is awesome. It is awesome. I'm telling you, I was a new person. Everybody was shocked. I talked different. I was still dressing different. I thought, you know, because first I was kind of wearing stuff to show, like the cleavage. I stopped doing that. Everything. I didn't go to clubs. I didn't go to the motorcycle club. I didn't do anything. I just went to church. I got into church, and I started writing. That night when God spoke to me, I got up out of the bed. The pain went straight away. I got up and went to my computer desk, and I started typing poems, writing love poems to God. And that's how it all started. And I never turned back, and I'm not going to turn back.
You cannot stop. For those of you who are listening, I want you to hear very well, even with all that she has gone through, there is still more. When we come back, we're going to talk some more.
In this life, you will have trouble. You can't avoid it. You can't get around it. But you can live through it.
Have you ever been there? One day you're smiling, the next day you're fighting to hold back your tears, to hide how you feel. So tired of thinking like everything is okay when you know it's not right.
You can't get
no sleep at night.
And now
you may be asking.
said, James,
grow through it.
You will
get through it.
You can make it.
You can make it if you just pray through it. Don't let this be the end for you.
It's not the end. This is only temporary.
So live through it.
Hallelujah. It always hurts more when it's someone close to you.
Someone you love.
Yeah.
May have just let you down.
But don't worry.
It's not the end of the world.
You gotta understand.
God already knows everyone who will leave you is better that way. Don't let them stay.
They didn't deserve you.
You didn't see it coming, and now you feel broken. How could this be?
It can't be God.
It cannot be God. I can only tell you what He told me.
God is saying,
live through it.
It's growing pains.
Grow through it.
Your family needs you to
get through it.
But here's the key.
You can make it if you just pray through it.
You gotta pray through
it. Don't let this be the end for you.
God only allowed it because He knew you could survive it. So,
come on. I know you're saying now, there's no way I can live through this.
But live
through it. No one can understand all that you have been dealing with.
You've been holding in so much it feels like you're
show with Jackie Wayans. Inspiration through word and song for you.
And as many of you know, I recently wrote a book called Don't Give Up and Win, a survival guide to renewed virginity, where I talk about my 15 years of experience with abstinence, celibacy. And when I say 15 years, it's 15 years at the time I wrote the book. It is still ongoing, so it's not that it has ceased in any way. And when you make that decision to honor the Lord with your body, there are certain things that we expect. That glory, that beauty is waiting for us. You know, when you had this encounter with the Lord and you change so many things about yourself. And like you said, that sexual desire, desire to be promiscuous just was not a part of your life anymore. And you went on to be abstinent for 10 years. And then you found yourself a victim of a chronic illness, disease. Share that mm-hmm. with us so we can understand what happened.
It was a minister, and we were talking. I had written a book, and Facebook wasn't out. MySpace was out. And he seen me on MySpace. I was promoting this book, and it was like my first book I had written. And we started talking, and we talked for almost a year, and he was telling me he loved me, he wanted to marry me. And I believed it. I was naive. And this was like 2.5 years into my celibacy. And he said, I'm going to get you a round trip ticket to Memphis. We're going to spend a weekend together. So I said, okay, my daughters kept telling me not to go. And I said, okay. And I was happy, you know, to be with him because I had feelings for him. And I told him I didn't want to, you know, I didn't want to have sex. But, you know, he's a man. So at the third day, that's when he, you know, was asking for something. And I said, well, you have to wear a condom. And he acted like he put one on. But when he got up, he didn't have one on. And I didn't think nothing of it. Well, I got a little nervous. But I felt so bad that I did that. And on the plane, I cried all the way home and telling God I was sorry that I did that. Well, 10 years later, I kept feeling ill. I was feeling tired and dizzy and kept going to the doctor. I think you got lupus. And so they kept doing this test, and it wasn't lupus. So they couldn't never figure out what it was. So I ended up going to like 3 more doctors, and this lady doctor said, your symptoms sound like HIV. And I said, no, I've been celibate for 10 years. I don't think that could be, you know, true. And she said, it can happen. And then next week came back and said, I tested positive for HIV. And I was devastated, and that's when I wanted to commit suicide. But I had no way to do it. My way was not to take that medicine. And I knew what was going to happen if I didn't take the medicine. And I didn't take the medicine.
Wow.
Really,
and I just have to ask, after you left that minister, did he ever try to contact you again? And I need to clarify for the listening audience, when we say minister, I'm going to tell you exactly what type of minister he was. But did he ever try to contact you after that again?
No, he said, I'm going to call you and let you know so we can, you get your stuff, get prepared, and I was a bunch of bull. Plus, he was like, we're going to get married, I want to marry you. He said, I'm going to call you, but then he never called. And I tried to call him like 3 days later, and his phone was disconnected. So I ended up moving to California. So I was changing my life. So I was going to California. I was happy. So I didn't think about him for all them years. I did not think about him. He was just my past. And until I felt that I was, you know, had that and couldn't nobody give it to me but him, because I didn't have
right.
it before him, and I knew it because I was tested. So, and I became celibate. But he seen me on Facebook one time. He seen what he was. He was meddling, and he seen some people were saying they were wondering where I had been. But I hadn't been on Facebook because I was depressed. I didn't tell anybody that I had HIV. And he ended up inboxing me and said, how you feeling? And I said, the doctor said I have HIV. That's all I said. And he went off on me. And we didn't talk anymore. He told me don't call him. Like, I never said he gave it to me, but that's what guilty people do. He's getting defensive when I never accused him, but I know he gave it to me. He know I know he gave it to me, and I think he did it on purpose. I never talked to him anymore, but he was seeing little. He used to send little, you know, stuff on my page, like on birthday, happy birthday, or sometimes, how you doing? And I won't answer because I don't want to talk to him. I had to forgive him. I had to forgive him. But I don't have to talk to him. I don't have to have a relationship with him.
Right, right. And so I want those of you who are listening to really, really hear the lesson in this story, because there are times when, you know, God pulls us out of some serious situations and he sets us on the right course. And I'm speaking to myself here, right? And because we want what we want, we get so excited, and the feelings of love can feel so good, and we just want to, you know, race ahead. But this gentleman was not a minister of the Lord. Let's be clear. There are many people who wear titles. That doesn't mean that's who they are. And he clearly was a minister of Satan, to be honest with you, because no one who is following the Lord is going to convince you to do something against God's word. That's not going to be the case. And you guys were not in alignment. He was not in alignment with what God wanted at all, and in what shape or form. So he was sent to derail you. He was sent to throw you out of alignment with what God had for you and your future, and to try to get you depressed and to end your life. But thank God that is not what you did. Instead, you formed a ministry called Don't Die, Stay Alive. Talk to us about that ministry and how you're working with HIV, people who have HIV and AIDS.
Okay. Don't Die, Stay Alive. Because when I found out I was full-blown AIDS and dementia, and they told my daughters I had 2 weeks to live, but, you know, we got God, so, and he's a healer. So I don't have AIDS anymore. So that's how that Don't Die, Stay Alive, because I will always put up quotes. I finally came out to my Facebook friends and told them the whole story and how I conquered AIDS. And so they wanted to read that. It was like something I had wrote, and they wanted to read it. And I started getting all these positive inboxes. So I had wrote something, and I said, don't die, for them to get tested. I said, go get tested. And I wrote, you know, how I didn't think to get tested because I wasn't having sex. So I didn't think that, okay, I'm going to go get tested. And that's what I was telling them. I was celibate for 10 years and still tested positive for HIV. So then at the bottom, I put Don't Die, Stay Alive. And then one of my daughters said she loved that slogan. And so that's how that was birthed. So two of my daughters, they were like, it need to be your ministry, because I wanted a ministry, but I didn't know what the name was going to be. And so that's what became a Don't Die, Stay Alive. And it's, what we do is healing hurting hearts through the art. So, you know, it's my play, and I got a play now, Stigmatized, that is going to be done in a church here in Louisville, Kentucky on July the 9th. So we're going to do a lot of stuff, and I want to take this in different churches. It's a program. It ain't just a play. It's a whole program. Mm-hmm. We got a singer. We got a comedian. So it's a program that I'm putting together, and it's something different. And God gave it to me, so I know it's going to blow up. And they're supposed to do it in Africa, but I don't have the finances to go over there. So I'm going to contact them and tell them, let's wait until next year. But they want to do the play in Africa, and that's awesome. They want me to speak. So this, I speak now. So I'm an advocate for HIV and AIDS, and I'm on a lot of organizations, like a member of. It's an organization called Kentuckiana AIDS Alliance. I'm on that. I'm just doing a whole lot of stuff, keeping busy, because that's one thing I've noticed. Like music and stuff, it's healing. It's a form of healing, and poetry, and that's what we're going to have, like poetry showcase. We're going to have everything that has something to do with art, fashion shows. We're going to have all types of things. But this play is the first thing that I'm having, so pray that it's a success.
Wow, you just threw out a whole mouthful there, and I know the listeners want me to ask a certain question. I'm going to ask it in a second, but you have to know her book is called Heaviness of My Heart, and she chronicles all of this in detail. So for our little 60-minute show, we're just able to give you little samples and snippets of it, so you've got to get the book in order to really get in depth with everything. But one thing I just need you to elaborate, because you just threw it out there like water. So you got really deathly sick, and you're telling me that the doctor gave you 2 weeks to live. You were on your deathbed. That's what you're saying to me?
Yes. Yeah.
And so what I want to just hear, because we can't get into all of it, I just want to hear that transition moment from you being sick on your deathbed in the hospital to the doctor saying, actually, you can go home. You're all right. What did that sound and look like?
They told my daughter, you know, I'm a dad. She's going to die, so it wasn't going to be a pain for death, so that I was going to die in my sleep. But that never happened. And my daughter, she allowed God to use her, and she came and talked to me. They kept telling me I was dying, and I wasn't paying them attention because I was depressed. I was severely depressed, and I mean severely. And so I didn't care if I was going to, you know, if I live or die, I didn't care because I felt like my life was over. I couldn't walk. I was in a wheelchair. I was wheelchair bound. They had to change me, so I was bad. I'm telling you, I weighed 98 pounds. It was a miracle. So we know it was God that I came back. I walked in that doctor's office. See, I was still getting better at home. Even shocked my daughter. I got up one day and started walking because I couldn't walk. And I started walking. I walked to the bathroom because I had to use it really bad. And they didn't hear me calling them. And I said, I'm going to see if I can walk. And I got up, and I walked. And I started walking, and I started giving myself my own shower and brushing my own teeth and tying my own shoes, putting on my own clothes because they did all of that. I couldn't do any of that. But when I walked in the doctor's office, he was shocked. He was shocked. He went and told people. He went and told, like, the nurse. They came in there. I was like, dang, I'm on display. They came in there, and they was like, oh, my God. They were shocked. Because I was not supposed to be alive. My numbers was really messed up. My viral load and my CD4 was messed up. Your CD4 is supposed to be over 200. Mine's 21, knocking at death's door. And my viral load was supposed to be zero, and it was 500,000. Now today, my CD4 is like 250, hallelujah, and my viral load is almost zero. I'm undetectable. See how God works. God is awesome.
Wow.
He's keeping me here for a reason, and I know it. He's keeping me here for a reason, and I'm going
to
do
it. And I'm sure there are people going to help support you to get to Africa where this testimony is definitely needed out there. Share with people where they can connect with you and find out more about you and what you're doing.
I have a website. I have two. But if they want to order the book, they can go to the My Life website. That's www.mylifeautobiography.com, and you can order the book there. There's another book on there, Domestic Violence. And it's like 99 cents, and it's a journal. So it talks about what I dealt with domestic violence. So I'm writing journals and I'm publishing them, and I'm allowing people to, you know, have theirs published as well. If they want to, I can self-publish it because that's what I'm getting into now, helping people self-publish their own book. But,
okay.
Because I'm doing it myself because, you know, I'm at the point now and I got to do it myself because people steal from you. So they done stole my place. They stole my ideas. So I got to do it myself now. But that's a
get
good
way.
Get
everything copyrighted. Get it trademarked.
Yeah.
Definitely.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Uh-huh.
Well, thank you so much for sharing with us. I'd love you to come
Thank
back
you.
Again and just have the conversation about HIV and AIDS because I have yet to really delve into that, and it's an issue we can't ignore that there are many believers who come into this situation where it was that one time, mistake, and here I am, I've gotten HIV. Some people, it was given to them by their spouses, right? That went out doing whatever, and so we need to address it because it is in the body of Christ. It does exist, and we need to support one another. So I'd love to have you back again for that.
Okay, thank you. I would love to come back.
Wonderful. Thank you so much for sharing tonight. For my listeners, listen, I know you're encouraged. I know you're blessed. And after hearing Tuana's story, you know that you can get through your week. You can endure this because the greatest hero of all said that you were worth it when he gave his life for you on the cross. So until next time, don't give up. Keep on moving and know that God is with you. Take care.
This time I want y'all to help us do it. Lift your hands in this atmosphere and say, I am grateful.
Have done.
Look at him and tell him, yes,
I'm grateful.
I'm grateful for the victory that we've won. Tell him I could go on and on.
About your works.
Because I'm grateful. Praise you, Lord. Lift your hands and say, flowing from my heart.